Hello and welcome to another episode of Let's Talk Man with the Gents Clinic. Six South African male medical doctors on a mission to change the way in which we perceive healthcare. My name is Dr. Sohail Ersa. Here in the studio is
Dr. Nhlanhla Vilakazi,
Dr. Vishay Naidu,
Dr. Brendan Matthews.
And today we're going to talk a bit about weight loss and the recent craze around Ozempic. Now, before we do that, as always, we're going to start our episode with a bit of a chat on an interesting case, or rather an interesting study. Brendan, you have anything interesting to talk about?
Why are you guys laughing now?
What's Come on, so tell funny? Tell us your pseudoscience here.
No,
so
like
off
me,
camera, Brendan was telling us that he read this interesting study that showed.
Yeah. So it's actually in the Journal of Sexual Medicine.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Which is a very highly rated journal amongst academic journals.
Okay.
And it's about premature ejaculation.
Okay.
So we treat premature ejaculation here at the Gentleman's Clinic. But what we always come across, or what we understand, is that premature ejaculation itself is not very well understood, its causations, what causes it, and actually treating it is not as easy.
Mm-hmm.
We know how to treat it, but sometimes the ways that we treat it are not accepted by patients and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a difficult topic, premature ejaculation.
So what study did you find?
Yes, so out there in the world, people are trying to find out the cause of it. And like I said, there are a couple of causes. But a new one that we found is that the bigger your head of your penis, the bigger the head of your penis is, the more likely they found in within that research study group to have premature ejaculation.
So where's the correlation?
Bigger problems.
You got a big head.
Yeah.
Big problems.
So think of it. I thought of this logically, is that your surface area.
Oh, because the sensory nerve endings are there. So if you've got a bigger surface area, the more sensational it's going to be for you.
So it found that within that study group, I read the study a few weeks ago, so I don't remember the specific numbers. But yeah, the bigger your head, the more of vagina your head is feeling inside, or the more of mouth your head is feeling.
The more of anus.
Whatever, the more of nostril, the more of the sensation. That's how I understood it.
Yeah, right? I think it makes sense.
Yeah, so they literally took all these guys who were part of the study, measured the head of their penises.
People in the study?
I don't remember.
Okay, yeah.
Is this erect penis? Erect.
Okay. Yes. And then after they measured the erect penis head, what did they make them do?
Yes, and then they found that, so I don't know, I can't remember if they asked them, or obviously they didn't watch, man, come on.
You can, okay, so if to make this experiment proper, you know what they'd have to do? They'd have to take a room full of guys, get one woman, because then otherwise you can change, a variable.
The style,
if she's moving too fast.
Yeah.
That's actually what I was thinking, that
if you wanted to do that,
it depends.
I don't look at us like that, Sister Bettina. You have to be, we are being scientific about it.
No, that one is
woman,
scientific.
Because if you change the variable, now you're changing the outcome. So potentially, if you've got 20 women and 20 guys, and they say,
it's a different erotic stimulus.
That's the problem.
So not now all the same.
It's not the same, because one woman you can last 20 minutes, another 2 seconds and you are crying.
Another never crying.
2 seconds, one pump.
There's this famous podcast. I think it's the British guy who has a podcast. I forgot his name, but you might find it there, Sister Bettina, where he was explaining that he once nutted so quickly that the girl didn't even realize that, you know, anything had happened. And then he pulled out after he had nutted and was like, "Baby, you're not ready for this. I think I can't give it to you. This is going to be too much for you. I think we need to, you know, come back after a while. Were you ready for me?" I'm like, what?
He was already out.
He was already done. He's pretending as if he's telling the girl, like, nah.
So he went in once and then just came out.
Done. Yes. And then he's like, "Ah, baby, you ain't ready for this." I'm just thinking, where's the nut? I mean, oozing out of her? Is it on the bed, messing?
Yeah, what? So...
But yeah.
No, if you really want to do that study properly, you'd have to get 20, like, or whatever sample size you're going to use. So 50 guys, measure all their penises, get one woman and say, right, you got to be ready.
Yeah, but then are you watching them? Are they standing in a line?
No. Yeah, so again, you'd probably not... Because then if you do it all in one day, then you're also messing it up. Because by guy 50, he's just sliding. He's just sliding.
So
man.
guys, in the comments, let us know that if this is a thing for you. I don't know what the size
if you,
of
like, I don't know if you and your friends just measure each other's and then check.
Yeah.
And then let us know
maybe
in the
that's
comments.
The course. Yeah.
Maybe we can
yeah,
also
know. How long you last on average.
Yeah, if just you have general. A smaller head or glance or penis,
but now
do
who
you
has,
last longer?
Okay, so generally you have a big head, you got a big shaft, you got a big everything. It's not like, who has like a tiny...
No, the issue is what's big, you know? You might perceive yours as
that's
small.
Yeah, what's the... You don't have the numbers, do you?
No. I mean, we can find it quickly if we just open the... I don't think it will...
It's fine. We'll post the link in the bio as well.
We'll post the link in the description.
Very interesting stuff. Yeah. Very interesting. Yeah.
So, I think I brought this up also for guys to remember that when you... Firstly, if you have premature ejaculation, there's a moria of causes.
A moria? What do you mean by moria?
So when I say moria, you know when people go to moria on Easter?
Yeah.
It's a lot of people. Yeah, a lot of people. So like a lot of causes.
But today we're talking about weight loss and specifically the craze around Ozempic. Mm. It's something that a lot of celebrities are using. A lot of fitness, even influencers are saying, go for it. This is this miracle weight loss drug. And it can be in some circumstances. But for the most part, we're here to talk about what you can do before you get to the point where you need to use medication to lose weight.
Yeah, yeah.
So let's start the conversation, Tlantla.
I mean, it's a broad conversation.
But you know best. You know best how to regulate weight and go
but
up
how's
weight.
How's obesity in South Africa?
I mean, what is obesity?
What is obesity? Good one.
And what are obesity rates in South Africa? Women, men?
So if you look at the stats, the ladies are killing it in this game.
obesity and overweight.
Overweight.
We have a huge crisis.
Overweight.
20%. So this is male obesity. Sorry, this is male obesity.
Yeah, so this is
men, women, boys, and girls.
So you can see on this graph, obesity, about 11% of men are obese, and about 20.3% of them are just overweight.
Yeah.
And when was this checked?
And then women, 26.6 are overweight, and 41? Wait, so that must be a total of 60-some-odd percent.
Yes.
67% are overweight, but 41% are obese. Boys are far less obese than girls. I wonder why that is the case. It could be hormonal, because estrogen, we know, does... Excess estrogen can really cause weight gain. I know that women that do take the estrogen-based contraceptive pill can gain weight, so that could be it. But then why would girls, I assume that these are prepubescent girls that are also
more
overweight and obese. So maybe it's the activity, you know, in our society, physical activity is made for men. Men play sports, girls must knit and sew and cook.
This is using BMI. I think of BMI. I think when BMI was formulated, they studied Europeans or American men, you know. So I don't think it's standardized. It's what we use to measure obesity. But think if you put a South African woman on a scale to measure her weight, whereas majority of that weight is coming from Ndunumos. Because South African women in general, black African women, have nice hips. That's what we're known for in the world. She's from Africa. So if that's disproportion, so we must consider.
No, I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
I see what you're saying. Like, it's probably body shapes, proportions, the design. But then it's weight based. So if you have big hips, but you're skinny, I suppose what he's saying is like you could be a slender woman with hips.
Yes, and big bones.
But still considered overweight based on BMI.
I guess. Because, I mean, the bone density and the pelvic sort of,
There's a term, slim, thick. You know, they're slim there, but thick.
But I guess what these graphs are highlighting, which you can't run away from, is the fact that we have a crisis. I mean, we have a...
Yes.
a pandemic of some sort.
So but it is still very weird. Like, look at how the
epidemic.
I mean, 67% of women are overweight versus like somewhere in the 30s of men. Overweight, it's like double the stats. Even so if you look at the obesity percentage, 11% for men, 41% of women are classified clinically obese in this country. I think it also, like, if you look at the majority of our population in this country who are like, if you look at the average majority of our population, like, the man gets up in the morning, he has to walk kilometers, take a taxi, whatever, to do his job, which is either manual labor or security guard or something like that. He's walking, he's active. Sometimes, you know, if it's a two-income household, even at that lower socioeconomic level, the woman, what is she doing? She's a maid, or she's doing some sort of work that doesn't involve, like, heavy manual labor. So the less activity, more sedentary. She doesn't really have to travel long distance. She's generally closer to the home, closer to taking care of the family, the kids, all of that stuff. So there's less physical activity. But the diet, because the diet can't be the difference. You know, actually, they're both probably eating the same things. No. Like, a woman eating more fatty foods than men?
No. I wouldn't put it that way. But, I mean, in terms of diet, the quality of food that you eat when you're in
but
that
lower
socioeconomic class.
But why
are women
more than men? That's
because you can
question.
Go to rural Eastern Cape in the Lara. The men there are slender. The moms at home, abogogo, like makulu, is obese.
Yeah. But why?
Because there's also other underlying hormonal issues that also contribute besides. But I mean, yes, but food, what I'm trying to say is that the quality of food that's there is
also. But it's not like men and women are eating different things in their homes, right?
Yes. Could be different. Yeah,
it could be
as
well.
It
could be.
You know, like the men would have the higher portion of protein, meat. Whereas the women and the kids would have
the starch. So the kids
and the boys. Could be.
So remember, that leads to insulin resistance and other. Endocrine abnormalities,
hypertension, you know, diabetes, big problems in this country.
So these stats are actually from 2022, and that for women rates South African women 23rd in the world.
So yeah, we have a problem. It's definitely more women than men based on these stats, which I'm sure are verified. And I do feel like women often are more likely to even consult with us for weight loss. Yeah. It's obviously we spoke about this on one of our episodes about body dysmorphia and how women perceive themselves, how the consumerist market has made women feel insecure in their bodies. And then a big market now is like weight loss. And in the past, weight loss has been this thing of like sort of if you're not like super, super skinny, then you don't have like, that's the beauty standard of skinny. But that's like European beauty standards.
Yeah.
For us here in Africa, and specifically South Africa, I don't think that's ever been the case. Like, I suppose the consumerist market tried to push that down our throats, but we were like, no, man, we like them.
Rounded. Yeah. And it goes back to most African cultures, Nguni cultures, where, you know, a man who's big, with a round, big, you know, pot belly, is symbolizes wealth. It symbolizes of, you know, can take care of the family, and you know they work a
health.
Bit harder. And it actually that's a big one. Yeah. And it symbolizes good health.
Yeah.
And I guess it goes back
because
to,
also in this country we've had the AIDS pandemic, which made people believe like, hey, this person's losing weight too fast.
So it's not something
skinny,
that's celebrated.
Yeah.
Also
Johnson is pending. Yeah.
And I mean, to this day, if you check, I mean, big fat, let's say, for example, tenderpreneur, that's like the look.
Mm. Yeah, that's a standard look of all of politicians.
I mean, I've also heard it countless
clothes
times.
That made specifically for that.
Yeah.
Skinny, like sleeves, big area for the abdomen.
Yeah.
Oh, serious? They make shirts specifically for the tenderpreneur look?
Yep.
Yeah.
Have you ever noticed how they all have shirts that are very tight here? But somehow they loose.
Oh, really?
In other places.
But they tuck them in with a Gucci belt and the Louis Vuitton shoes and the
And why all these sex tapes that always come out and are trending? It's always a girl doing all the work and a mkaba bra just lying there,
just being
just
bounced
saying,
on, just like a trampoline.
You know, he's just. But why is that girl with him? He's just lying there and saying, "Injani sende, baby, Injani sende." That's all. he's lying and doing, you know.
But I guess it goes back to, again, the fact that, you know, majority of the men that have those type of bodies somehow have been associated, or maybe even they do the same thing. Mm. Basically, when you start making a bit more money, then you start, you know, sort of neglecting certain things and building that body that resembles, you know, what the ladies like.
It symbolizes excess.
Mm. Yeah, it does symbolize excess because you've got more. Let me show you how much more I have.
And what better way than to...
Just to let the belly hang.
Yeah.
But, I mean, okay, so seeing as we're speaking about African culture, obviously, you're the only African person here. Now, you don't have Kaaba.
No, I think it's
now,
also...
But when you go back home or when you're there with your family, do the elders look at you and go like, what the fuck is wrong with you? Like, why do you need these muscles? You've got money. Just eat and relax.
Just say skoda.
No, I guess... Yeah. I think it's different for different people and different... Even South Africans, you know? And different families. Because I mean, especially people who grew up in quite rural settings.
Yeah.
I think they probably still hang on to those kind of, you know, sort of, you know, survival. Because I think it's all from that. Like, you know.
If you had family back in the rurals, do you think they'd be like, what's wrong with you? Like, why are you wasting your time building these
muscles? Most likely.
Muscles?
I think so. I think they would. I mean, I see so many videos of people in KZN, like, especially old, you know, rural people, trashing people who go to gym. Like, you know, speaking about how men are making money, you're busy looking at yourself in the mirror, you know, you're busy exercising, you know. If you need any kind of help in your life, if you're exercising, because most people think we actually exercise to attract women.
Ah, only, you know? That's
yes,
the only
for,
thing.
That's not, the only thing. That's and not, that's not really what people, I mean, maybe in the beginning stages when you're young or 18, but you're looking for women that time anyway, you know?
I mean, that's just from the cultural aspect. I think that obviously, and it goes across, and South Africa is a diversity of cultures.
Mm.
But if you look across the board, I don't know if like, in Indian culture, it's not like a thing to have a big belly. Like, it's not like a sign of wealth or anything like that.
No.
But most of us have high blood pressure and cholesterol just because of the food that we eat. Yeah. Curries, genetics, and that's just pure diet. Yeah. Like, cholesterol, this, that.
You mean Indians?
Indians, in general.
I actually teach students, if an Indian man walks into your casualty with chest pain,
you must know.
You don't play around. Don't, like,
He's having a heart attack.
Doesn't matter how old he is, you're working up for a heart attack.
Yeah.
Straight,
true.
Because they also come in very lean.
Yes.
And you know, with no sort of comorbidity. So you don't think, you know, this person is really
like
having something serious.
The most fat people.
Yes.
They generally actually are, you know, in the bodybuilding world, you call them hard gainers. You know? So, they come in lean. So you don't, like, obviously assume he doesn't have a belly. He doesn't look like he's someone
like
with metabolic
problems. Yeah.
And then you find out this guy's having triple vessel disease and it's dying.
You mentioned hard gainers. I think a lot of what we can talk about today can also focus on hard losers. Weight loss.
Well, weight loss. And also, I mean, if we're talking about weight, I think it's important to know that there's people on both ends of the spectrum. Like, there's people who want to gain weight and there's people that want to lose weight. Because even being too skinny is a problem.
Yes.
It leads to, like, nutrient deficiencies at times. It can, obviously, poor body image. All those things. But before we move on to that, Brendan, Khaled community, what's the thoughts on weight?
I heard you busy saying you're the only African here. I'm indigenous, you forget.
Ah, for come on.
But yeah, with Khaled, it's really, you see, as much as what you get Khaled, we also segregated.
Yeah,
there's Cape Khaled, people in Eastern Cape are different.
But you talk about your specific experience.
Yeah, I was always, when I come home from varsity for holidays, I'm always getting told, hey, this lighty is too thin, man. What's going on in Joburg? You know, you're not eating. That time I'm eating Mom Susie's food, like,
at the Ray's Kitchen. Yeah, that's where we eat.
In the Ray's Kitchen, you know. So it was also a thing that, like, when you're away from home, once I started getting money, it was like, hey, who's okay by your Lena? He's gonna get fat, you know. Now, just because I'm earning a salary, the reason
people
I'm
just
speaking,
assume,
yes, the reason why I'm speaking isiXhosa is because my family's got Xhosa influence in it and colored. That's why we're so
fragmented
as
colored.
Yeah.
Mm.
So it's a similar thing then to African culture because it's obviously it's rooted in that.
Definitely.
I wonder, like, if you think about the other cultures in South Africa, white culture. You have to look very slender, you just very have skinny. To be skinny. The beauty yeah. standard in the white community is you must
but
look
Afrikaner
skinny.
But Afrikaner must be butch.
Yeah.
Must be,
yeah. Yeah.
The men. The men.
And
yeah.
Afrikaans women, they have bouda.
Yeah.
Is it?
They have bouda. They like a woman who's got meat. They don't like skinny yeah. women.
Oh, in Afri- is it?
Like Afrikaans, if I you ask an Afrikaans man what he likes in a woman, he doesn't want a woman. He wants a woman with childbearing hips.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay.
That's okay. Their beauty standard. So it's different in the English white versus Afrikaans white.
Why do you think white girls these days, like over the past 10 years, now all of a sudden have like more bigger asses than what their moms might have had? Or I have a theory as yeah. to why that is. During apartheid, I don't think Gloria or Maria were allowed to carry the children when they're looking after them in the house. But post-apartheid, all our generation were born were on the back. Because now Gloria can put you on the back. It's fine. New country, rainbow nation. What muscles is gymming there on the back?
Yeah.
Huh? You think that's enough? I think there's a lot of influence that we get from American culture. And with Kim, literally, I think it's Kim Kardashian is the one that set the precedence that now white girls can also have big bums. But before that, like if you look at beauty standards, late 90s, early 2000s, it was like Paris Hilton and that. No bum.
Nothing.
Schwapa, flat.
And bras like that. Nothing. Bras vied for that.
I don't understand.
Cameron like, Diaz.
Cameron Diaz and all those girls are like, what did you see? There's nothing
That's why they
there.
Say there's, you know, there's someone for everyone in this world. I'm telling
yeah,
you.
Yeah, that's true.
That's
man.
How there I look
be.
At it. They can't
but
be.
That was, but yes, you say that, but that was the beauty standard. That's what everybody desired and wanted. They wanted that girl with just nothing there.
Mm-hmm.
Just back and legs. Just
back and legs.
That's straight.
Like a pubescent boy.
Yeah, like a prepubescent boy. In fact, in Indian culture, it's still fairly prominent that girls must be skinny. Like asses, you don't care about a big bum. That's not like
just be
beauty
skinny,
sense. Skinny and extremely fair. That's it.
Is it?
Yeah.
So skin complexion. No, you guys need to
skin complexion is a
catch up
thing.
With the times. And
skin
evolution.
Complexion and then the flat
so
bum.
So you'll be surprised when... So when I speak to someone that looks to me like they're overweight or obese, I always ask them, what do you think about your weight? And if they say, I feel my weight is fine, majority.
Yeah,
you know?
most.
And then now it needs me now, I'm just like, now I need to talk for long because now I need to now sort of change behavior and all of that and help with weight loss. But people generally... You need to find out from them, how do you feel about your weight?
Because some people are genuinely very comfortable being overweight, either from their cultural like background or the fact that, like, as you were speaking about money and excess and wealth and whatever, a lot of men gym and keep themselves healthy, let's be honest, just for that reason. Just for women. Because they know that if I look good, I can get more women. And if you've got the money and if you don't need to do anything to get women... And a lot of them feel like, well, what's the point? Why should I get up every morning and get on a treadmill? Why must I sit in the gym pumping weights when I can get whichever woman I want?
Yeah,
doesn't matter how I look.
That's
some
sad,
people,
actually.
Some people, it's part of their job, like a rugby prop.
Rugby props, shot putters in Olympics. It's also functional sometimes that you can even be an athlete and still be quite heavy.
There's
nothing wrong with that, but it's based on your sport. Power lifters, for example, those guys are massive, got big bellies, big chests.
Yeah.
They've got muscle, but I mean, if you look at them, you probably will go like, "Oh, this person's not unhealthy," but that's not maybe how I'd want to look.
So guys, there are people that want to lose weight. There's been this whole craze with the Ozempic, people wanting to lose weight, trying to lose weight.
Yeah.
Our Minister of Sports, Arts and Culture.
Gayton.
I don't know, has Gayton McKenzie posted a before or after picture yet?
He also gone on...
He's on a proper weight loss program now. We don't know. Is he using Ozempic?
But is he using something? Oh, okay.
Oh, we don't know. If he's using something.
But if we're comparing those two pictures, there is no change.
But we do know some people in Parliament that are using. We can't obviously disclose any of that information.
Yeah. Okay, no, submarine.
Yeah.
But guys, if we're speaking about... Wait, I don't know, you want to say something?
Yeah, I just wanted to ask you. because you are obviously touching on Ozempic, and just to give us a bit more
Tell us a bit more about what actually
I wanted to get firstly to, before we speak to that, as to those people who want to lose weight. So we, as the Gentleman's Clinic, we've been frustrated now for the past 2 years. Every time we go on the radio, when we speak to colleagues, people demonizing Ozempic, demonizing tirzepatide, semaglutide medication. We know colleagues who hate any patient who comes and asks for medication to lose weight. You know, but I think that he's lost
1.6 kgs in the last
seven days. No, that sounds realistic.
Yeah, that's a reasonable weight loss.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. It could also just be water.
But I'd also like to speak to Gayton. Like, on Gayton McKenzie and his
journey on weight loss.
So us at the Gentleman's Clinic, like you guys know, we always talk about this. Every time someone, like we speak to colleagues, other doctors on radio, Carte Blanche had a topic on it. It's all over. And everyone has bad things to say always, you know. But we need to start at a point where understanding what is it that regulates someone or causes someone to be obese or overweight, right?
Mm.
So what we've always been taught and what we are still taught as doctors is that it's what you put in and then what you put out. Mm-hmm. So it's what you eat. And then when you go to the gym, it's basically eat less, move more, right?
If you want to lose weight.
If you want to lose weight. Yeah. That's what we've always been taught. But we need to understand, firstly, like what happens to many people. I'm not saying everyone who eats less and moves more won't lose weight. Many of them will lose weight and are consistent, and it becomes a lifestyle for them. And they become healthy, and they keep it off forever. But there's also people who just go on like a roller coaster. Lose weight, gain it back. Lose weight, gain it back. Because
which is most people,
Which is a lot of people.
Actually, the majority of people that have ever consulted, even before Jen's Clinic, it's always been like roller coaster people.
Yes.
Yeah. I want a crash diet. I want to lose this weight fast.
Yes.
They can stick to it, but they can only stick to it for like 6 weeks. Now we talk about, like when you prep, you're doing like 12 to 14 weeks of prep. Like what's your average prep time now for a competition?
No, 12 weeks.
12 weeks. That equates to almost 3 months of hard dieting.
Yeah.
And then are you able to maintain that once you're done with the competition?
You can't.
It's
also not healthy to maintain such low body fat.
Like low body fat. Yeah. Like
neither are crash diets. Crash diets, are they really healthy to do that?
No, so obviously, I mean, someone may look at Nhlanhla and go like, he's crash dieting in that last 2-3 week period. But he's doing it for a very specific thing. But over the course of the year, your diet is still fairly clean.
Exactly.
It's not like you're binge eating and you...
And then just for that 12 weeks, you...
Because if you had to do that, there's no way you'd be able to correct that in 12 weeks.
Exactly, yeah.
So, I think we need to... What we do is, obviously, we understand that that exists, but we also move away at the Gentleman's Clinic from just eat less, move more. Because we understand what influences appetite. Because appetite is the bottom line here of everything. Because when you crash diet and you exercise, you're hungry. Are you not hungry after you've had a good gym session? Don't you want to go and eat?
Very hungry. And I feel like I'm just putting back all that hard work that I put in.
So there's actually three, if you look there, there's actually three, mechanisms of how appetite work. And the one of executive function is what we know about, and what the eat less, move more is about, is that we believe that deciding to when to eat is the only thing that controls people. You know, we say that control your appetite, you know, have some responsibility, take charge of your diet. Why are you eating that burger? And yes, that does exist. Those are self-regulatory processes that influence eating. I see food and I go pick it up.
Yeah.
But the ones that are neglected are the eating for hunger and the eating for pleasure, right? There's people, and that's controlled by the reward system of the brain. There's people who eat when they're stressed. Some people are permanently stressed. Some people are overworked. Some people
don't sleep well. Yeah.
So they're always eating, you know, as a coping mechanism, as that reward system, dopamine, you know. And then you get people who eat for hunger, right? And that's got a lot to do with appetite hormones, the homeostatic eating. Is that when they eat, they become hungry again, the hormones just get released. So some of that is genetic, some of that actually a lot of it is genetic, and that's what people don't want to accept, is that you might have, but also influence from the environment, lots of sugar in everything that we eat currently. Some people have insulin resistance, all the fast foods out there, and you get poor regulation of your appetite hormones. So those people can't help it.
But how do you know that, you know, this person, for example, if you're seeing a patient, that this is not someone, like this is someone who has the behavioral sort of control, but it's more hormonal now because they're so like intertwined.
I think there's no hormone that you can measure to say whether a person has poor impulse control or whether it comes from behavioral eating. Take it from me, who used to be extremely large as a teenager and obese. I don't know if I was clinically obese, but I was very, I was definitely classified. If you looked at pictures of me, we can't pull them up.
We'll find them.
We'll find them and you can put them up. Yeah. But I was quite large. And then at that time, my father, he's a drill master. That man doesn't, he wouldn't allow me. He was, every single time he sees me, he's like, "Why are you so fat, man? Are you not doing anything about it? Can you not control yourself?" Yeah. Now, obviously, if I didn't have that hard pressure from my father saying, like, "You got to do something about this. Like, this is not okay. It's not good for you," maybe I wouldn't have changed. Maybe I would. Do I have that innate impulse control where I can say no to food and no? And to be honest, to this day, I still have a problem. I eat a lot. Mm. It doesn't look like I eat a lot, but I do eat a lot, but I know then I must put the work, the hours in at the gym to compensate
what
for
them. What do you think that you, where would you fall in? Maybe two of them, three, all three, or one? What would you think?
Like, do I eat for pleasure? Of course I eat for pleasure. We all eat for pleasure at times, but not on a daily basis. So I think one thing that being in the gym, so initially my weight loss journey started with a lot of cardio. My father loves running and cycling. Yeah. So our bonding time was just that. No talking, just standing next to each other, running up hills, doing cycling. We did like long endurance stuff. My father is an avid cyclist. So I've done the Cape Argus, 110 kilometers on a bike. Sure. Done the Amashova, Maritzburg to Durban.
Oh, nice.
Then the other thing I used to do was 21 kilometers. So my father runs half marathons. We joined a running club every week Sunday in my matric year. I ran about 14, 21 kilometers in a row every Sunday. So that was where the weight loss really started. Came from. Apart from that, it was also sports. I was playing a lot of basketball, soccer, rugby for a short period. And then when I came to varsity and I met you guys, Vish particularly, before
you're
even
motivated.
You, Vish was just That's when I really, I hadn't really touched weights before then.
Yeah.
To be honest, I never really touched weights. It was body weight, like I do push-ups and things like that, but never the weights.
Yeah.
And then first year came, and then Vish was just all about the
you
gym.
Jumped on board.
First, it was all Vish built his body this way down. Now the man's got massive legs, but before it was just Samusa.
So, guys, coming to this, right? If you'll notice that the other two, the eating for hunger, which is a lot genetic and got to do with appetite hormones, and the eating for pleasure, we're actually finding they need medication. Guys, listen out there. They need medication or surgery, okay?
So who?
People who...
Lack?
Who are eating for hunger, right? Those people who become hungry very easily. It's not by their own control. They eat, they get full, and then an hour later, they again got another burger in their mouth.
And so you think that those people are just eating for pleasure?
Okay, we'll go like later on as to how you find them. But this is what evidence is showing. This is what current, like up-to-date research is showing.
So what you're saying is the hormones are basically off, and so the hormones are telling them you're hungry again, eat, even though they actually their stomach is full.
That's right. Or might not be full, but it might be like you don't need to eat again. Like you've just ate.
So I think the reason why I was talking about my specific journey about eating and food, because I used to do so much cardiovascular exercise and my week was filled with, I was running at least 21 kilometers a week, plus then sports during the week. My calorie intake was actually quite high, but I was still able to maintain a fairly low weight just based on the fact that I was doing so much,
so much cardio,
particularly cardiovascular exercise. But then the problem is I had this look of very skinny fat.
Yeah.
Because I didn't have any actual like hardcore muscle there to actually increase my basal metabolic rate. So for those of you who don't understand, to increase your basal metabolic rate, you need a certain level of muscle because muscle constantly needs energy. And so it demands more energy. And that's how you can actually keep your weight, your fat at a low level because you're constantly, the nutrients are being pumped into the muscle. So I only really realized that when I started weight training and trying to gain muscle, that, okay, if I really want to do this properly, I've got to actually restrict my calories to some extent. Yeah. Because if I'm eating like that but doing predominantly weight training, I'm going to balloon.
Yeah.
And I'll be picking up weight, but I'll also be fat. I'll have a terrible look. The muscle's not going to look great.
Yeah.
But that was my journey. And I think it's interesting, Vish, you were a hard gainer. Like, you were the opposite. It took you, you needed to eat a lot more to gain versus, like, you didn't come, you weren't fat naturally as a kid.
No. So, I mean, I think I'd probably classify myself closer to, like, between, like, a mesomorph and ecto.
Just define what those mean for the people.
So, mesomorph generally patients, I mean, people who can gain a lot of muscle very quickly. Ectomorph, people who can eat as much as they want, probably also train as much as they want, but still don't gain.
Yeah,
very endomorph, high. People who are generally overweight, start off
That's
overweight.
Me.
I mean, first year, second year was pretty much when we actually really started going more regularly.
I started
regularly.
A bit earlier than that. But yeah.
Yeah, come on.
I was lifting crates.
Yeah. Crates there.
But yeah, I mean, I started weight training, I mean, I put on a lot of muscle, like, relatively easy, I would say.
But you did, acknowledge that you probably had to eat a lot more calories than you'd normally be eating.
Yeah, so I think one of the things was I never had a lot of eating for hunger prior to weight training. So my diet would pretty much consist of whatever it was needed to be at homeostasis, to like balance the books, basically.
Yeah, so how much you take out, you put back in. But now you were eating.
Now I would end up eating a lot more because I was training.
Yeah.
And I felt I would put on a lot more muscle than I would put on fat.
Fat, yeah.
My diet's changed quite a lot now. So, but yeah, I think that's how I feel my journey was, training.
Yeah.
I mean, I think, as you were saying, like, putting on muscle, like, you actually, because it takes, it requires a lot of energy to maintain, a lot of what you eat actually keeps your body fat percentage low.
Yes. You also, like, what I found is with the weight training and actually gaining the muscle and seeing the results, you also tend to want to eat foods that make you feel better. Because if you're training, like, you don't want to be eating an ice cream just before gym, for example. You don't want to be able to, because also your workout's going to be crap. You're probably going to look crap afterwards. But if you're eating a nice chicken and rice and like veggies and whatever, I feel good eating that. So I still eat a lot. No doubt. I still punish at the table. But most of my foods come from really good sources. Like I actually enjoy eating like that rather than eating like just junk food and sweets.
We've heard of the pizza and creatine pump.
What? and creatine pump.
No, so I mean, you generally have a better or like a more, or you have a better pump in terms of your workout consuming, I would almost like say, more
high
like
carb,
unhealthy carb.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, yes, the sodium. Yeah.
Dirty carbs.
Because
dirty
of the sodium.
Carbs, yeah. Whereas if you eat like
and
a lean chicken, some rice, like, you don't have like that amazing
look,
like pumps,
but that's the look of. But what's actually happening inside your body?
I completely agree. But
if that's what gets you through a workout and gets you through training, I mean, why not?
But I mean, how good? Pump. Okay, tell me, do you feel on your dieting time? Do you feel just crap throughout?
I mean, in the initial stages, obviously, it's not as tightly regulated as like towards the end. So I mean, starting off, it's okay. I don't have any cravings. I eat quite a lot. I actually have to remember to eat. Not remember to eat, but like remind myself to eat Because it's not for hunger. I mean, if you're training once, sometimes twice a day, you need to eat
and keep fueling your body through exactly, those workouts. Yeah.
But I mean, as time goes on, then once you start cutting the sugar and the salts and being strict on your sugar and salt, then you start feeling.
Then you start really to then feel you start that your realizing workout starts being it's crappy. And
you start eating for, you know.
Deciding to eat.
Yeah, deciding to. And eating for pleasure and all those. Like things that you generally don't.
But on the eating for pleasure part, I think one very important thing I learned, I don't know if it was from you or you when we started training, and obviously you read stuff and we watch YouTube videos and things, it was like the cheat meal. I never like considered that before I started weight training, that a cheat meal is actually very beneficial for you. Mm. One, it reduces your cravings because you're probably thinking about it the whole week.
Mm.
Then you actually get to have that.
Mm-hmm.
And then on top of that, it actually has a hormonal effect. I believe, I can't remember which is the hormone that it improves, your leptin.
You mean what?
When you have a cheat meal, that high fat, the consumption of high fat increases your leptin levels, which actually reduces cravings. So leptin, if you're constantly dieting and eating like low fat, low sodium, all that type of foods, your leptin drops and it can actually increase your cravings over time. Mm. And also negatively contribute to muscle gain.
Mm.
Whereas when you eat a high fat, high sugar, whatever meal, after not having it for a long period of time, you get a spike
in leptin.
I'm sure which actually causes fat because over time your body is going to say, okay, we now have been starving for so long, we need to store fat. But then you have this massive spike in leptin and it says, hey, actually, we're okay.
Yeah.
That's basically your body saying, yeah, it's fine. We can still stay lean.
Yeah.
You don't need to hold this much fat. So that's the whole point of like a cheat meal. So I think we would. This is just talking about like ways in which before you even.
This is now a weight gain podcast now, not.
No. We're talking about your general health. Yeah. I mean, it is important to maintain muscle.
Yeah,
one thing that they can tell you about elderly patients, the more muscle you have, the less chance you're going to have of osteoporosis, all of that. Mm-hmm. So muscle mass is actually the thing that we should all be striving to maintain. The less you use of your muscles, the more they're going to atrophy, and the more likely you are to end up that frail 65-year-old person lying in a bed. Whereas you could be a jacked 70-year-old veiny, just walking around looking like a 70-year-old penis. But that's muscle. So maintaining muscle is a very big thing that we should push. We should say that's how you actually stay healthy throughout your life. Muscle, maintaining muscle is the thing that's going to keep you give you longevity over anything else.
I think it's good, but I want Dr. Matthews to just come back on this one. So in terms of Ozempic now, right? Mm. I've had people saying, you know, like Sister Bettina was saying to me earlier, that why are we advocating for anti-diabetic medication to be taken by people that aren't diabetic? Are we not going to be creating a new crisis now where, diabetics are running out of medication?
And I think it's important for people to understand what Ozempic actually is and what it was made for to treat. So,
okay. Seems like you guys are also sounding negative about it. But let me explain. So weight loss, medication for weight loss. Firstly, if you can go to the slide that shows doctors versus patients in terms of, if you look at this one, this was a study, we'll also post this one, that asked patients and doctors, is diet good for weight loss? And doctors said more than patients that diet is good. Is exercise better? Doctors were advocating for exercise. But when it came to medication and surgery, the patients were the ones who were saying that I need medication, I need surgery. And the doctors were saying, no, you don't. And I mean, why do we think that is?
Why I can tell you why. I can tell you why. Because often a lot of us think that it's an easy, quick fix. And maybe you haven't gone through the rigorous process of
eat less,
move more. Exercise, move more, do all of that stuff.
You're talking about exactly what I was saying we shouldn't be doing for everyone. Mm. We're going back to patients.
I'm saying you're asking why does a patient advocate for that first? Because they don't want to do the hard work. They don't want to do what Ntlantla does, wake up at 6 a.m. and go to the gym
and eat fish and lettuce. Indicated for them. How do you know the hard work is indicated for that person?
Okay, how do we know it's not unless we've tried that? So for these patients...
You need to phenotype your patient, like we said. Are they, what type of eater are they?
You know,
we spoke about.
Exactly. But I'm arguing the point of a lot of patients will obviously come to you and say, give me the easy way out. Give me the bariatric surgery. Case in point, woman phones me yesterday, say, I got your number from so-and-so. I heard you guys do weight loss. I want to lose weight on my neck and my arms. Like, the first thought that went into my mind was, okay, then lift something. lift something many times a day. You'll see what will happen to your arms.
I think you could have approached her better.
So I think patients oftentimes want a quick and easy way out.
Yeah.
Mm. It's that they haven't tried exercise. They haven't tried a diet. And that's why they would come to you first and say, cut me open, remove my gallbladder. People don't realize,
remove my stomach.
Cut me open and put a balloon in my stomach.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you realize how invasive that is?
Yes.
And obviously patients, they read about it online. You're going to lose X amount of weight. So you don't think about the fact that you're going to have a scar. People may have to cut you open, put a balloon in your stomach. That thing can pop. You're going to have so many complications. I want this medication. Yeah. Mm. There's side effects on any medication that you take. But patients are obviously going to go, let me do the most,
Before
you talk, I just want to say something. Right? So I think another thing that's sort of an underlying or subconscious, thinking while you're busy saying all of this, is how we were all trained, you know. Mm. We were, actually at med school, that's what they've emphasized, you know. Whenever a patient, firstly, we all taught that weight gain or sort of obesity
and by
is
the way,
huge
contrary
crisis.
To people's beliefs.
Yeah.
Because people think we just want to push drugs.
Yeah, yeah. That, I mean, there's no drug. Actually, do they even tell us of drugs?
They never taught us about any weight loss drugs in med school.
All we know is
we only learned it afterwards.
Exercise. That's it. Mm. And you get taught. I mean, seriously, even in your final year.
Yes.
In hypertensive patients,
physiology.
There's even a DASH diet that, you know, go on a sort of a certain diet, a diet plan, reduce your salt intake. And that's the only way you lose weight. And that's the only way you can control all these problems. So I think this has now made some of us question whether, you know, have we been doing the right thing? Are we grouping patients, you know, correctly? And why is it that other people, I mean, I, for example, in the gym, right? There's people I've seen 4 years. And I mean, like, these people are gyming hard, lifting. And they, most of them, what's really, really sad is that most of them are actually doing like cardio and total body workouts and deadlifts. Mm. And you watch them through the years progress.
They look the same.
No change, no muscle gain, no weight. You know, I sometimes want to go and say, bro, what keeps you going? Because I take pics before gym, after gym. If I start seeing nonsense, ask my wife, she'll tell you. She knows the whole diet needs to change. There's a tummy coming and we need to change everything in this house, you know.
Yo.
But that's just how we live. Yeah, yeah.
Sorry, I think that's a very important
but
point
that
he brings
up. Change. Mm.
It, is that patients, no matter what it is, if you're going for BBL, they want it now. They want that change now. They're not going to put in the time for 5 years to get the ass shaped as what a BBL is going to do in a month, in
so
weeks.
So they want quick fixes,
so they
going
want
back
quick.
To what I said.
So people are going to want quick fixes for weight loss as well. And it's us as doctors, we're going to need to take the time.
To have a vetting system to be able to do that. But I know where my personal bias lies. My personal bias lies in the fact that I went through that hard process.
Yes.
I went through that hard, grueling process in my room, in the middle of the night, doing push-ups, sit-ups, carrying a fucking bag, 5 kilo bag of wheat, I mean flour. Like, I did all of that stuff because I was so concerned about how I looked and my health and how I felt.
But you're
and
lucky.
I did that.
You're lucky it worked for you. There he's explaining people who do that and don't get anywhere.
But can you imagine if they didn't do that, like where they'd be?
Yeah.
I can assure you that those guys are probably going to live longer than us because they have excellent cardiovascular function, excellent probably muscle mass, but they fat. You get healthy fat people.
Yeah.
And a lot of times if you're looking for health, you must find out if your patient's a healthy fat person or is an unhealthy fat person because you can have the two. But it's our job as doctors to sit with the patient and walk them through it and say, look, it's not just straightforward as a pill or this or whatever. Let's look and find out what's best for you. You might need it, yes, but let's have a consultation and sit down and see where do you stand. You know, are there conditions? Those people might have thyroid problems. That's why they can't lose weight. Might have low testosterone.
Yeah,
and that's why they can't lose weight. Which is a pandemic on its own now.
We know. And I mean, well, then we look at phenotyping.
And we can discuss.
And so
we look at, so there was this study that was done in 2023, just last year, where they literally took all those groups that we spoke about, the person who eats for hunger, the emotional eater, and then the person who eats on demand, and they put them into different groups based on that. There's a questionnaire that we use at the Gentleman's Clinic that we formulate to try and find out where you sit. And you could sit in two different categories, and found that, you know, if you're a person who has a hungry brain, that's the person who, you know, in their mind, the appetite centers are not, you know, I'm messed up. They're always hungry. The brain is always telling them I need food. Then there's that medication. That one is known as Duramine. You guys, I'm sure you all know Duramine and topimerate, and they work at, you know, at in different ways to actually modulate the hungry brain. And I'll show you probably the next slide. We'll put up how doing it this way actually has the best outcomes when you actually put people into those categories. And then you can just go back. The emotional hunger. So the person who's very emotional eater, stress eater, needs the naltrexone and bupropion. The hungry gut is the person who needs semaglutide now. Liraglutide is what we've had
for longer. So when you say hungry gut, what do you mean by hungry gut?
So that's the person who is not full.
Just never gets full.
They just don't get full. They're always eating.
So it's not a thing that's coming
from
the brain?
No, it also is. It also is. Because
but
remember
then how do you determine between who's the hungry brain and who's the hungry gut?
They can fall in both. In both categories as well. You can use those medications. You see, if you read the study, you'll understand. It's just that I understand it because I read it. But this is very simple, what I put together here. Liraglutide is a form of Ozempic, but it's every day, and it's not as
Saxenda,
effective.
Yeah, that's the one X was on.
And then you get slow burners, and those people that you were describing are slow burners, who are not able to lose the weight. But of course, you need to rule out other causes first, testosterone, insulin resistance, diabetes. Before you even go to this, you need to rule those things out. Thyroid, like Fish said. And so this, we can go to the next one that shows like, so the blue is like people who are actually phenotyped specifically. So if we found that you have a hungry gut, and we put you on Ozempic, you lost weight much better than those who were not phenotyped and just told, go exercise, go eat, and eat less, you know?
So it's important to ask those questions to make that clear-cut diagnosis and assessment before you
And you won't always get it right. You know, people have different reasons for their weight loss, I mean, their weight gain, but you must try your best to understand, where does my patient fit into this, you know? Is it a genetic issue? Is it a medical issue?
Yeah.
Is it a hormone
question.
Issue? Yeah.
If and I'm just asking you your personal opinion, if you saw this patient, saw a patient for the first time, you went through the questionnaire, are you immediately going to say, okay, I phenotyped you, this is the medication, or would you say lifestyle modification first, come back in a month, then let's see?
So lifestyle modification is number one. It should be implemented in everyone, right? But we can't say that. We can't shoot someone down if they're unable to maintain a diet for the rest of their life. Like I always say to students as well, okay, you're going to tell a patient lifestyle modification, right? You're going to tell them to eat more vegetables. You tell me the names of five vegetables. Do you know five vegetables off the top of your head? How are you going to counsel them as to what are they going to eat?
I'm sure.
You know?
I'm sure.
You're thinking now.
It's five vegetables a day.
And in our country, it's also difficult. I mean, if you think of the type of patients we see in clinics, to say to go eat five
veggies.
You know, different veggies on R1,000
have
pension.
A snack of biltong and peanuts at 11 o'clock in the morning. Go eat pap in the morning, you know, pap at lunch.
Pap with some soup.
Because that's not only because she's poor, that's what she knows. That's what she's accustomed to.
Education issue.
So people are accustomed to certain diets. You know, you can't change South Africans and tell them no. But definitely lifestyle is like number one. You have to. You're not a good doctor, I believe, if you don't drill home exercise and eating healthily. Because it's cardiovascular, you know, benefit as well. On the heart and the whole body, there's benefit in that. Yeah. So coming specifically to Ozempic now. What is Ozempic?
Tell us.
I thought you were actually here.
So I think I should start by first explaining that weight loss drugs are relatively new in the whole world.
Yeah.
Like I stand to correction, but around the 70s or 80s, there was a drug of Orlistat, the one that makes you, you're just cucking oil the whole time. You'll know that drug.
No.
There's a drug you drink that doesn't, it makes your body not absorb oil. Fats.
What's it? I know the.
It's called Orlistat.
Fibrates, they call them. The cholesterol-lowering drugs, fibrates?
Not fibrates. Orlistat literally prevents your body from absorbing fats. Mm. So your stools are fatty, like you're just passing oil, like just oil. Then the issue is that you'll just be sitting and get up, and then there's like now oil on the pad, on the pants.
So why don't they use that for patients with dyslipidemia?
I'm not sure.
They
if
do.
It
I'm sure that one of this is, you're talking about a fibrate.
It's probably
a fibrate.
But it's called
Orlistat. And it's one of the last treatments that you use along the lines of anti-cholesterol lowering medications. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. So then the other drugs that we looked at, like bupropion, which is actually an antidepressant, they found...
Yeah, dopamine agonist.
Yeah, over the past few years that it helps. There's a anti-epileptic drug, topiramate. And then, of course, there's your duramines and so forth, you know. So these things are relatively new. And then Ozempic is literally like 3 years.
And what is Ozempic? 2 years.
So it's semaglutide, which is... really, its effects are worked on the gut. And what semaglutide does is reduce appetite, reduce hunger. It slows down the movement of food through the gut and reduces the liver from making more sugar. So that's why it's good for diabetics as well. And that's how it, the main function of how it helps you lose weight. And I mean, that's everything we were talking about, I believe, in one. It's... The hungry gut, it's the emotional eater but the other ones as well fall in that.
So you'll feel fuller for longer, essentially.
Feel fuller for longer, yeah. So there's concerns that people have, which I think that in all the studies that we have, even though it's a new drug.
I think my biggest concern with the drug is...
I don't think that these concerns are as scary.
Look,
and valid,
it works wonders. There are people who've lost like 20 kilos in 3 months, like ridiculous numbers. And sometimes, you know, as the saying goes, sometimes if it's too good to be true, it probably is. You can't have some miracle without like any side effects.
Mm.
And I think the one thing with Ozempic that is concerning is it actually, it's basically also, it causes catabolism. So everything, you lose weight, but that means you're also losing muscle. Mm. And going back to what we said, one of the best ways to lose weight is to gain muscle.
To gain muscle. Mm-hmm.
If
yes,
you're
I
able
totally
to gain
agree.
Muscle with the least amount of fat, that is a telltale sign of longevity.
Yes.
Mm.
And if you are going to lose weight quickly, you'll lose everything. You'll lose your muscle. And eventually you're going to have to come off Ozempic. Otherwise, you'll just end up skeleton and bones.
Yeah.
but at some point, you're going to have to come off. And the rebound weight gain at that point can be significant also because you don't have the muscle mass.
So
a lot of women particularly want to use it because they want that skinny look.
Yeah.
They also then look back at themselves in the mirror and they're like, I was a big girl with good curves. Now I look horrible. I've got no bum. Now I look like a skeleton.
Yeah.
And that's not also what I want to look like. So that's why even with Ozempic, again, lifestyle modification number one. You've got to be lifting some weights. You've got to be eating a high protein diet. That has to be a part of it if you're still going to use this. So that would be my biggest concern. And that's why, like for men, I think we can probably chat about this in another episode, but testosterone is the thing.
Yeah.
For a lot of men, they don't realize because they've gained so much weight, estrogen level is high, testosterone's low. You increase the testosterone, they start losing weight, and that's much more healthy for men. For women, it's a bit different, and they... in my opinion, probably would benefit more from the Ozempic because they also naturally don't hold as much muscle anyway.
Yes. Mm.
And men who can have the ability to hold much more muscle, I would rather them getting more muscle than just losing everything.
Yeah. Mm. Mm. So my problem with the people out there who say, "Do you don't use Ozempic, you're going to lose muscle." You lose muscle mass with any rapid weight gain. If you go on a
with
crash,
any rapid weight loss.
Weight loss, sorry, yeah. With any rapid weight loss, you're going to lose muscle. Yeah. If you go on a crash diet, if you go on keto diet, if you go extreme cardio, any weight loss that's extreme is going to give you Ozempic face.
Yeah.
You know, there's this thing, Ozempic face. You're going to lose muscle mass with anything. That's what I tell patients who want, you know, what we're considering prescribing Ozempic for, is that in any diet, in any weight loss program, you're going to need to prioritize protein, not just for Ozempic. You're going to need to prioritize weightlifting.
Yeah.
And if you're a man who's been obese, we've got a powerful combination that we prescribed there. It was actually formulated by Nhlanhla.
There's no formulation that I have done.
Testosterone, Ozempic combo. Yo, that thing is powerful.
It's very powerful. Yeah. I'm saying it's very important to also highlight the fact that Ozempic is a generic for semi-glutides. It's a trade name.
Panado is the name over the counter, but paracetamol is the drug.
So there's other companies who make semi-glutides that are not called Ozempic.
Yeah.
So, and there's obviously another discussion about, you know, what we have.
So, for example, a man, and let's think about Gaten McKenzie. He's been overweight for a long time. I'd love to know what his testosterone levels were before his weight loss and what they are now. Because there's a high chance that his testosterone levels are low and then he loses weight, he's going to lose muscle mass and he's going to look scrawl. He's going to look skinny and sick.
Yeah.
Anyone who loses massive weight looks like they have more wrinkles, saggy skin, and they look like
they're
old.
But that's the thing. Like, for example, in bodybuilding terms, there are phases of bulking and cutting. When you're increasing your muscle mass, you're obviously also going to increase with a bit of fat as well. Mm-hmm. There's no denying that. But then when you cut down, you can cut down and still maintain that muscle. So instead of doing these crash diets where you're going to lose a whole lot of everything, if you maintain your diet properly, you can lose weight, lose fat and still hold that muscle.
Yes, there are side effects. There are people who are using Ozempic in the wrong way. The dosing is very specific. People have this idea that you start at a certain dose and you can stay here and lose weight. And then after a month, they're like, I didn't lose weight. This thing's not working.
Yeah.
It's very specific and it's more complicated than what you think. High doses can also make you sick. I had a patient who went to the GP and the GP injected them with 1 milligram of Ozempic. 1 milligram.
As a first time.
She presented with persistent vomiting, like vomiting persistently. Nothing you could do could stop her. She's just like nonstop. She was in so much pain. But things are happening out there that are wrong. And there are side effects if you don't do anything right. Drink enough Panados, I'll see you tonight in the casualty. You know?
True,
So don't think that because it's Ozempic, there are these side effects. There are side effects for everything. You need to use it correctly. And these people who are just so anti-medication, it's because maybe, you know, sit down with your patient. Give your patient the time. Find out who your patient is in terms of their weight gain and their problems with their obesity. Get to the crux. Phenotype them as the way we do and get the best management for them. Stop this demonizing of Ozempic and demonizing of medications, because there are people who need it, just like there are people who don't need it, but there are people who need them
100%,
as well.
100%. Any other final closing statements?
No, I think, this was very educational.
I think in the future, when we talk about weight, I think it would be interesting also to talk a little bit more about actually people who find it very hard to gain weight. And there's enough people also struggle with that. So we'll talk about that in the future. In closing, I'll just say, I think that Ozempic is there. It is useful and helpful in a controlled diet exercise regime plan. I think that it should be used in conjunction with everything to get the best results. And always remember, less can sometimes be more.
Yeah.
So the less you need to do to get to a point that can be far better than throwing a lot of chemicals and stuff into your body. Try what's natural. Try to change your mindset about weight. You don't have to be a skinny stick figure to be healthy. You don't have to look like Nhlanhla either.
What do you mean? What are you talking about?
I mean, you could look like Nhlanhla if you wanted, but we're just saying you don't have to look at his body and go like, if I'm not that, I need Ozempic, I need testosterone, I need all of this stuff, otherwise I'm going to hate myself. No, You have to be at peace with your body and your health, but at the same time know that you're doing your best and getting the right advice. And if you do need the right advice, now you know where to come to.
Yeah.
Jensclinic.co.za will help you with the consultation. That's been another episode of Let's Talk Man with the Gents Clinic. My name is Dr. Sohail Essa, signing out.
Chanta Vilagazi.
Vishen Naidu.
Dr. Brendan Matthews.
See you guys next week.